DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So we told you yesterday we had a brand new name for our show, at least for this week only. We're calling it Underdog Nation Daily. Now, yesterday I kind of did my own sort of homemade sign here. Come to find out our graphics department's kind of also gotten involved here too. They have now got our own official sign that says Underdog Nation Daily. So we're actually in really good shape here heading towards a Saturday and what should be a lot of fun against Georgia and Alabama and Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And yeah, for me, it is a lot of fun to embrace the notion that Georgia, as our buddy Eddie's showing us on the set, for those of you watching on video, you can see that. If you're listening to the radio or the podcast, you may wonder what in the world we're even talking about. But we've had fun on set with this all week long. Eddie, who normally sort of touts himself as a Gator hater, is kind of questioning the idea that Georgia could be a two-touchdown underdog. Underdog Nation Daily is a kind of our unofficial moniker for the week, because the whole point of the whole thing the whole time has been that we believe for Georgia, a team that's done as much as it has in the month of November, kind of riding high, feeling a little competent right now, to also get the added benefit of having nobody believe in you, and we'll get into later on just how true that is, how little the public seems to be believing in Georgia right now. We just feel like that is a level of motivation that Georgia can use to its advantage on Saturday. And I want to dig deep into that right now for a moment, because I thought there was something that Georgia defensive end Jonathan Ledbetter said yesterday that really resonated with me. First of all, Ledbetter's one of these guys. He just got a lot of gravitas. I think part of it's because he wears those eyeglasses during the dog walk, and I'll always assume that anybody wearing eyeglasses is smart. So he's kind of got that cool sort of professorial look as it is. He's been around the ringer for a while at Georgia. This is truly a experienced veteran senior, and he spoke with a lot of bass in his voice yesterday. The question came up, hey, you know, how much are you worried about battling this Alabama offensive line, this great Alabama offense that's you know, racking up yards and points at a historic pace? Are you guys going to cower in fear as a 13.5-point underdog against this group, against that bunch on Saturday? And I think Ledbetter said what every Georgia fan would love to have their leader, their, you know, premier defensive end say. Here's what Ledbetter said in response to all that kind of talk.
We come to play with anybody. You know, I think that our offensive line is, if not, you know, the best in the country. So we go against them every day. So they have an offensive line similar to us. So I believe that, you know, we've seen this so many times. We see this every year. We see this every day of practice. So it's nothing new to us. You know, every offensive line basically in the SEC is physical, it's big. You know, you got guys that are like 6'7", you know, 330 pounds, 340 pounds, you know, upwards of there, that are mobile. So, you know, they can do more than one thing. So it's not a surprise to us that we see an offensive line that's like this.
We come to play with anybody. In other words, we're not worried about the opponent. We don't, you know, have some great level of fear for the opponent. Obviously, it's respect. You heard Georgia players over and over again yesterday discuss the level of respect they have for Alabama. I'm assuming the feeling is the same on the Alabama side looking towards Georgia. But in terms of, oh my gosh, who are we, little old Georgia, to go take on big bad Alabama, there ain't none of that coming from the Georgia locker room this week. This is a tough game. This is a game in which Alabama is justifiably the favorite. But this is not one of those deals where George is going to say, oh, we're just glad to be here, and hopefully we'll get lucky and find a way to keep this one close. There's a level of confidence here on the Georgia sideline. It's one of the reasons why we embrace the status of Underdog Nation Daily, because we just think that adds to it. In a game like this, where both sides have a lot of talent, it's that little extra edge that can also matter, and we think the notion of Georgia being an underdog here is potentially that extra edge. And it's also worth pointing out, when Ledbetter says we play with anybody, I don't think that is false bravado the way that it might be a lot of times when a different player and a different team might say that. And here's the reason why I don't think that's false bravado. I think this Georgia team is very much aware of something that we have mentioned a lot here in our program, that if Georgia had played Alabama in September, the all honest truth is the game probably would not have gone very well. And if these two teams had played even in early October, around the time Georgia played LSU, the chances are this game probably would not have gone very well. We have never on our show, nor do I think privately any Georgia player or coach, thought that Georgia was going to be the wire-to-wire best team in the country. We always knew that 2018 would be a little different than 2017, one of those years where Georgia was going to have to grow into this role, that by the time December rolled around, Georgia might be ready for what Alabama brings to the table, because it is. Let's not sugarcoat this. Let's not gloss over this. It is a formidable foe, but it has won. It is one that Georgia has been rising to the occasion to be ready to meet over the course of the last few weeks. When Kirby Smart spoke after the Tech game on Saturday, the regular season finale, after what had been a pretty impressive month of November for Georgia, Kirby Smart acknowledged that, yeah, his team has gotten better, and it's one of the reasons why I think you hear Ledbetter speak with the confidence that he spoke a moment ago. Here's Kirby Smart to emphasize that point further.
We've gotten better, I feel like, with each game. Our team has improved, especially offensively. We've gotten better throughout the last, I don't even know, three, four, five, I don't know how many games that's been. But, you know, defensively we've had ups and downs, but our team has improved. Our young players have grown and matured, and our older players are really buying in. They have since we got here.
So questions about defense that Kirby Smart still has. We'll have more on that in a moment. But on the notion of Georgia's improvement, especially offensively, as Kirby Smart says, I don't think there's any denying whatsoever that's been the case. In fact, another Georgia player who seemingly agrees with Kirby Smart on that the month of November, that time since Georgia lost LSU, took a week off to get ready for Florida, we have clearly seen a different version of the Georgia offense in that time since then. Kirby Smart just said it. Georgia running back Elijah Holyfield, he feels like he's seen the same thing.
After that bye week, we kind of refocused on ourselves and we kind of went back to the basics and went back to work. Ever since then, we've kind of been clicking a little bit higher. I think it's come from a lot of guys getting more experience. You know, everybody just kind of figuring each other out and playing together better.
So, I mean, everything you're hearing here from Georgia coaches, Georgia players, is all, I think, to a certain extent, music to Georgia fans' ears. Doesn't guarantee a victory against Alabama, but it's all what you want. A team that feels confidence right now, a team that's not afraid of Alabama, and a team that's leaning on the fact that it has spent a lot of time over the month of November improving. But I do get there's still going to be some skeptics about the whole notion of underdog nation daily, the idea that that's any kind of storyline that matters at all in a game like this. I understand that. Let me see if I can do my part, the best I can, to explain why being an underdog matters not just in this game, but really in all conference championship games going back, about a 20-year history of this kind of stuff, a little bit more than that maybe. Going back and looking at the history of these conference championship games, being an underdog has actually been kind of a nice place to be, at least in terms of playing better than expectations. The Action Network is a website that covers the gambling industry and the stats associated with it. Now, I don't always understand the math behind all this kind of stuff, but I do think this is pretty interesting. Here's a stat that the Action Network put out yesterday. Right now, according to their data, Georgia is receiving just 39% of the spread bets. It's part of the reason why we're saying underdog nation daily this week. Not only is Georgia a huge underdog, the public is also lining up to bet Alabama as this prodigious favorite. Right now, just 39% of the bets on Georgia. But that's been good news in the past. According to the Action Network, the 39% of spread bets that Georgia's received, teams in conference title games receiving less than 40%, which Georgia is right now, are actually 24-15-1 against the spread. They've covered the spread 61.5% of the time. The overall bottom line to that is, when teams are as big an underdog as Georgia is right now and have as little public support as Georgia seems to have right now, in the past, those teams have exceeded expectations in conference championship games, which could be good news for Georgia this upcoming Saturday. Now, I know what you're about to say to that. BA, I don't care if they cover the spread. I want them to win the game. I do get that, and I can't promise you that's indeed going to happen. But everything I hear coming from Georgia this week sounds exactly like what I'd want it to be. This is a team that is growing in confidence. This is a team that has respect for its opponent, but it is not afraid. It's the proper mindset, I believe. And I think the public, who's probably watched Alabama a lot more than it's watched Georgia, may not quite realize just how talented this Georgia team truly is right now. And then on Saturday, 4 p.m., CBS, in front of a huge national audience, the game of the day, by the way, a huge national audience, I think a lot of people might find out that Georgia is actually a lot better than they thought. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Underdog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for the fans of the two-touchdown underdog, Georgia Bulldogs. It's good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter feed. Radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and in podcast form. Wherever you find a podcast, including the Apple Podcast Player or the worldfamousdognation.com, we're really glad to have you on the program here today. And huge thanks to Marco's Pizza for making it all possible. They are not an underdog. They are a heavy favorite when it comes to a pizza because they treat every day like game day. They're always bringing their best. That means dough made fresh, original sauce recipe, and three signature cheeses on every pizza, every store, every day, the Italian way. So say hello, Primo, by checking out Marco's.com and finding the Marco's location nearest you. We will get our buddy Jeff Sintel coming up in a couple of moments. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here today, presented by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. Coming up in just a moment, by the way, I'll also announce the winner of our Get Out of the Doghouse giveaway that we've been doing, courtesy of Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. I'll announce the winner coming up in about 5 minutes, so stick with us for that here as we go around the doghouse. Before that, though, I want to focus in more on something that Kirby Smart just said a moment ago. That when he looks at the improvement that his team has seen over these last 4 weeks heading towards Alabama on Saturday, the audio you just heard made it seem like Kirby Smart was a lot more confident in the improvement that's happened offensively and maybe still a little curious about what still needed to be done defensively. And it's not just that one clip from Kirby Smart that indicates that. There have been a lot of instances over the last couple of days where he said, you know, something to the effect of feel really good offensively, you know, defense is still a bit of a work in progress. And that's obviously, I think, the key storyline in many ways for what's going to happen against Alabama on Saturday, because Georgia can score 40 points and still lose. If Georgia doesn't find a way to slow down the Alabama quarterback to Tuatagovailoa and this prolific Alabama passing attack. Everybody knows that by now. Jonathan Ledbetter, who we heard from off the top of the program, also had some interesting things to say about that yesterday, that, you know, Georgia defended Jalen Hurts for the most part in the first half of the national championship game a year ago. It's Tuatagovailoa in the second half. It's been Tua all season long here. And as Ledbetter explains, the challenge of Tuatagovailoa is just way different than the challenge of Jalen Hurts. Here's more from Jonathan Ledbetter on that.
First and foremost, it definitely does change. You know, what we kind of do a little bit. Last year, they were a little bit more run-oriented, and, you know, they ran the ball a lot. And then we were able to kind of stop the run that game. I think Tua is a dynamic player. He's very elusive, and he's a deep ball threat. We got to make sure our DBs are on top of that. And, you know, we definitely got to make sure we affect the quarterback, whether that's with getting sacks or getting batted balls or just great pocket push and just making them throw uncomfortably. I think the name of the game is just, you know, kind of make him uncomfortable for as long as you can.
I think it's really fascinating and insightful from Ledbetter that it's a concert of work between all the defense. Hey, secondary's got to lock down the wide receivers, but Georgia can't, according to Ledbetter right there, can't just sit back and pass coverage all day long. They got to get in that backfield. They got to rattle the cage of Tuatagovailoa a bit. They've got to make, I think the word he used there was uncomfortable. I think that's an exciting thing for Georgia fans to think about, that Georgia is going to try to get after the quarterback. After all, statistically speaking, Georgia hasn't been great at that all season long. Had more tackles for loss on Saturday than we've become used to seeing for Georgia, but Alabama is a far different creature than Georgia Tech. We would all agree with that. So exactly how is it that Georgia can make him uncomfortable? Exactly how is it that Georgia can get into the backfield and truly put pressure on Tuatagovailoa? Mississippi State did it, but how does Georgia do it? Here's more from Ledbetter on that topic.
You just got to have your rush and your coverage is working together. I mean, you got to have all four guys on the front line making sure those A areas of escape are closed, and, you know, he can't escape in the B areas or the C areas. You know, you just got to have everybody doing their job, knowing where the guy next to them is, and, you know, knowing, you know, where those gaps are so that somebody's there to fill them. Secondary has to be, you know, on point. You know, you can never relax if he was to ever get out the pocket. You got to make sure you continue to, you know, cover your guys so that they don't just have, you know, easy downfield throws to wide open receivers. You know, everyone has to be on their toes.
I think it's really interesting that in both of those clips, the thing that Ledbetter seems to be talking about the most, and that's just two clips, that's not the, you know, the full body of his belief probably, but isn't it interesting how much he's talking about to his legs in both those clips, his ability to keep plays alive? If you'll notice there, he wasn't talking about Tua taking off and running and getting a first down. He was talking about kind of a scrambling deal where he keeps the play alive and allows the receiver to then get open. We saw Tua do that to a great effect in the Tennessee game, for instance. That seems to be what Ledbetter's concerned about right now. But it's also an interesting chess match for Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker. Obviously, you don't want to give Tua too wide of a passing lane to throw to. A lot of these quarterbacks, Jake Fromm included, Tuatagovailoa as well, do really well when facing pressure because there's just wider lanes to put the football into. But Ledbetter seems to know that they got to put some pressure on Tagovailoa, and exactly how it's schemed up to create that kind of pressure, that could be one of the really fun things to watch in this game coming up on Saturday. It's Around the Doghouse here on Tuesday, presented by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. And, of course, Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa is the perfect place to go for the holidays. We're going to announce the winner coming up in just a moment to our Get Out of the Doghouse sweepstakes. Let me also tell you that right now you can use the Brasstown Valley Dog Nation special, which is just for Dog Nation daily listeners only, or as we say this week, under Dog Nation daily listeners. You can get 20% off any room booked between now and March 31st. Just simply go to BrasstownValley.com. Use the promo code DOG18. That discount's available until December the 31st, and it's also subject to availability, and blackout dates do apply. So check out BrasstownValley.com for more on that. But without further ado, we've been talking about our Get Out of the Doghouse giveaway for a long time here on Underdog Nation Daily, and I'm proud to announce that our winner is Denise Giles from Carrollton, Georgia. Congratulations to you, Denise. Thank you so much for being a part of our program, and hope you enjoy your time there at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. I am sure that you will. I had a chance to be there a couple of weeks ago, and what a beautiful resort that is. Great food, unbelievable service, just an unbelievable place to spend during the holidays or really any time of the year. So enjoy yourself there at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, and huge thanks to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa for being a part of Around the Doghouse here every day on our Dog Nation Daily, or as we say this week, Underdog Nation Daily. All right, we got plenty more to come up after this. We'll hear more from Alabama coach Nick Saban. Will react to some of the stuff he had to say. But for now, on everything that happened in Athens yesterday and everything going on around the recruiting trail, let's do our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. Let's welcome in Jeff Sindel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We have got two huge events coming up later on this week. I will tell you about those as we go through our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here with Jeff Sindel. But before any of that, though, let me say hello to Jeff, who was in Athens yesterday and kind of been around all over the place on the recruiting trail the last few days. Jeff, thanks for being a part of the program, and hope you are doing well today.
Hey guys, I'm great. I'm gonna describe the following as this is one of the weeks. It's great to be a Dog Nation reporter and do what we do. Even though I think I've been to Oxford, Hilton Head, Savannah, Athens over the last 4 or 5 days. So that's a long trek of road trips. But that's why we do what we do. Why do we do what we do for everybody out there?
Yeah, those miles that you put on your car are certainly to our benefit because we get a chance to read all the stuff that you've got coming up at DogNation.com. And, Jeff, I actually want to try to sort of, you know, split the difference on both these here for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. I've got a lot of recruiting stuff I need to ask you about, but you were also in Athens yesterday, and there are a couple of interesting tidbits I want to get from you based on your eyewitness account from being there at the athletic complex yesterday. Let me start with this. You had a chance to hear from Kirby Smart. You had a chance to speak up close and personal with a lot of the Georgia players, including Jonathan Ledbetter, who we've heard from on this show just a couple of moments ago, Elijah Holyfield as well. What did you make, and I realize that you have to extrapolate some to give an answer to this, but what did you make of the mindset that you saw? As you know, we're really touting the idea this week that for Georgia, it ought to be considered fun to be an underdog. Dogs don't get this very much. It's kind of a nice storyline for Georgia to have a chance to shock the world for a change. You think UGA's embracing that? Certainly doesn't sound like they're afraid of Alabama. What did you make of the clues you were able to pick up about the mindset that UGA seems to have right now?
Yeah. Hey, Brandon. Well, first of all, it's really interesting theater, and I would call it sometimes silly media rhetoric. I know it's early; everybody's trying to hype up a big game, and I guess the natural storylines are Kirby's time at Alabama. How much does he know Nick Saban? Taking on the man, trying to beat the man. How do you stop Tua? How do you stop all those receivers? You know, that's all the yada yada yada. In Georgia, that's just the nature of the way the Bulldogs are under Smart. They want to simplify all that. They want to make it about blocking and tackling. I don't think the line of scrimmage comes up enough in this game. I don't think the fact that Alabama is so good, they haven't really had a great run game this year. They haven't probably needed it, but there are very few games this year where they've had a guy go over 80 yards, much less 100. Maybe they're not necessary. I think special teams is going to be a big way for Georgia on that path to victory. And they do things, but you know, there was a moment in all that rhetoric where Coach Smart said something where he kind of threw an olive branch at the media and said, you know, I understand what you guys are doing. I understand all the questions you have and why you have the questions are there. He said, I realize you folks have a job to do, and his job is to answer those questions. But through all that, there was a sliver of reality for me, in any way, as a reporter, kind of covering that. And Smart just simply said, you know, maybe his back was broken by all those scenario questions. But he said, I'm not worried about how we're going to stop these wideouts. I'm more worried about how we're going to stop these wideouts than to stop the quarterback. I'm not fatigued by this. He's getting a lot more concerned with how Georgia's going to play and where they're going to play guys and how they're going to go about doing things. That's all this staff and that's all that gentleman has on his mind this week. It's finding a way to slow down Alabama.
Well, trying to slow down Alabama or trying to keep pace with Alabama is obviously made a little bit more difficult by what seemingly is still some injury issues that Georgia's dealing with. And I'll admit, Jeff, as a fan, I was hoping to hear at the beginning of the week a little bit better news on Ben Cleveland or Cade Mays or Monty Rice. But when Kirby spoke at his press conference on Monday, you were there for it, he was kind of noncommittal about their status. Chip Towers reported at DogNation.com that, at least during the media portion of the viewing period on Monday, Monty Rice wasn't seen practicing, neither was Cade Mays. Jeff, those three names that I just mentioned are three guys that, as a fan, I really want Georgia to have back as close to full strength as it can get them for what it's going to need against Alabama. It's an all-hands-on-deck situation. Is this Georgia sandbagging, or are there legitimate concerns that Rice and Mays and Cleveland are still not 100%?
I guess, Brandon, a lot of Dog Nation, and let me make sure I get the phrasing right. Underdog Nation Daily.
Thank you, sir.
.com is Underdog Nation is hoping that Georgia will pull a Tua with a lot of those guys like Monty Rice, Ben Cleveland, and Cade Mays, and they'll all come out, come into the squared circle, I guess, a little bit at halftime, full of health and ready to defend Alabama. Just doesn't look like those guys are there yet. You see, you know, it was kind of funny, though. Monty Rice was in crutches on Saturday, but there wasn't a walking boot there this time. And Kirby said yesterday that he's walking on, or in the teleconference on Sunday, he said that he's walking off one crutch now. So I guess that's an improvement. And it seems like, you know, with the Ben Cleveland injury, you got to remember, first of all, he's such a big, tough kid, young man, that a lot of people think, well, if anybody's going to be strong enough to come back from that, it would be Cleveland. But in some ways, it appears to me that Cleveland's mass might be working against him. He just doesn't even really seem really comfortable walking around. Some folks have noticed him walking around campus, and they tell me that it's still not a fluid, easy motion, a gait for Cleveland, which lends me to believe how much he'll be ready to go other than like punch shield or emergency type stuff. I guess one encouragement on the injury front that I thought was highly interesting is the Quan Hawkins-Muckle was practicing yesterday, and that was included in Chip's underdognation.com report. And I don't know how many people get this now. Is the Quan Hawkins-Muckle going to play like Jordan Davis? I don't think so, but it's more depth for the defensive front. And folks, the significance of that is simply this. The Quan Hawkins-Muckle is one of the oldest and biggest bodies on the Georgia defensive front, even in the whole program, and he hadn't played for 7 weeks. And now this week, in advance of the biggest game of the season, Daquan Hawkins-Muckle looks like he might be able to go on Saturday. That's one of those injury wrinkles that I know that's not the injury good news everybody was hoping to hear, but that was something a little bit unexpected. Smart also gave clean bills of health to some extent to both Robert Beal and Trey Hill. Both of those guys kind of had incidents at the Georgia Tech game that kind of caused some fans or those that were watching the sideline to monitor those guys.
Yeah, and I should also, I guess, point out, too, not to get too lost in the topic here, that Alabama's also playing its own share of games with its injury situation. Terrell Lewis was at practice for Alabama yesterday after tweeting out a couple of days ago that, hey, maybe he's going to give it a shot. For people who are not aware, Lewis is a pretty impressive outside linebacker who tore his ACL in July. Jeff, there ain't no way a guy that tore his ACL in July is playing in this game on Saturday.
Now, Brandon, confession time, true serum time. Did you notice that, or did you notice it because Nolan Smith tweeted that one out, sir?
No, I did not. I didn't know that Nolan had tweeted that. I'd seen the tweet myself. This is just more, I guess, gamesmanship by Nolan on Twitter. But I feel both confident in Nolan Smith, I think, and I also feel pretty confident to say that Terrell Lewis is a very good player who will not be a factor in this game on Saturday because ACL injuries just don't heal that quick.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing to think about. I mean, Terrell Lewis was an interesting guy last year because he was injured most of last season as well. And then he came back and had a key sack in his first start of his career, I believe, against Georgia in the national championship game.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I guess Georgia's also kind of done the same thing because it certainly had been Cleveland front and center a couple of weeks ago for a game that he probably wasn't ready to play in either. But with that said, here in our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, before we talk about some recruiting stuff, and I've got some stuff I want to get to, let me give you a couple of updates on big events this week, and they both involve our friends from Marlowe's. First of all, this upcoming Thursday, it's Road to Atlanta Live at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. Cannot wait to be there. Jeff Sintel going to be a part of this. Our buddy John Stinchcomb, the former Georgia great, is going to be there as well. It's 6 to 8 p.m. and the address, and I'm going to say this twice for those of you who are listening, not available to see the screen, 3575 Durden Drive. That's 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. It's the Marlowe's in Brookhaven this Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. We'll do a whole bunch of previewing of the big game on Saturday. John Stinchcomb's going to be a part of that. He's got great stories to tell from being a part of Georgia's first win in the SEC championship game back in 2002. We were also getting very close to the start of the early signing period. Jeff Sintel is going to have some off-air, not fit for print intel for you. So please come by and see us starting at 6 p.m. this Thursday for Road to Atlanta Live at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. Now, speaking of Marlowe's, they are also going to be a huge part of our gigantic tailgate on Saturday at the Blue Lot starting 11 a.m. Now, if you were at this event last year, you know how much fun this was. We heard all kinds of folks say, are y'all going to do this again this year? We said yes. We're essentially going to do it as much just like we did last year. That means the folks from Dixie Vodka are going to be on hand with those complimentary samples for you to enjoy. We've also got giant TV set up for you to see all of the action on before the big game on Saturday. If you want to stick around during the game there at the Road to Atlanta tailgate, you'll get a chance, I guess, to do that too. We've got Dog Nation giveaways. I've been told we may have some t-shirts, some brand new Road to Atlanta t-shirts to give out. So this is going to be an awesome, awesome event. As we said, Dixie Vodka, Kroger, Cadillac, Marlowe's Tavern, Pella Window and Doors, they all make it possible. It starts this Saturday, 11 a.m., which is the Blue Lot on Northside Drive, which is right there across from the stadium. This is going to be a lot of fun. Even if you're not going to the game, but you can be near downtown Atlanta, come by and see us at 11 a.m. on Saturday in the Blue Lot for our Road to Atlanta tailgate. Jeff, with that said, let me transition to talk some recruiting for a moment. Jeff, let me talk some recruiting, and I thought your piece on four-star running back Noah Cain on the heels of his official visit to Georgia this past weekend was very interesting. One of the things that I took as the most prominent in that is his praise for the Georgia offensive line. Going back to his Texas official visit and the reports that came out of Austin after that, it was Herb Hand's offensive line that he seemingly liked the most about Texas. I'm going to read between the lines here and say, if he feels that good about Georgia's offensive line, that's probably bad news for Texas because that was one of their major selling points to him when he visited Austin. I feel like it seems pretty obvious, at least to me from my reading of this, that Kane's really interested in Georgia. Is Georgia really interested in Kane?
I think the answer to both questions there, yes. Otherwise, they wouldn't have brought him in for a last official visit, so to speak, especially when they already have a guy in Kenny McIntosh committed. In that piece, we kind of discussed why, and the depth chart could swing in a more positive manner for Kane over the next month or so, and that would heighten interest. To speak directly to your point, Brandon, I thought it was pretty funny when I was talking to him about, he said the best thing he likes about Texas would be that they're redshirting an outstanding group of offensive linemen in Texas, and they're going to get back to Texas football next year with unwrapping all those behemoths, I guess, on the offensive line. And I think it goes without saying that Georgia is playing its freshman offensive linemen because they're too good to keep off the field. And I do think he's aware of that.
And I, you know, you touched on this a moment ago, and I thought this was maybe one of the more interesting quotes from the entire piece at DogNation.com, which you can go check right now to see more from Jeff with Noah Cain, is it seems like, in no uncertain terms, Cain believes that a Georgia running back currently on this roster now won't be on this roster next year, if I read it correctly. Now, he doesn't, you know, say if he thinks it's Holyfield or if he thinks it's Herrien, but Cain thinks somebody's going, right?
Yeah, he does feel that way, and you know, Brandon, kind of like what we talked about before the week, this was a, you know, I'm gonna try to clean up my beloved grandmother, grandmother's Southern lady English a little bit. But this was sort of a, this whole weekend, that official visit was a go number two or get off the throne moment for both parties there with Georgia. And what I mean by that, forgive my Southern man vocabulary a little bit, but what's happening there is they wanted to know, is this for real? Would you be willing to ride with us? Do you want to ride with us? Yeah, and this all was left where, I mean, no one told me he had at least a 45-minute conversation with Coach Smart. And that we're going to start calling that, you know, not the Come to Jesus meeting, but the Come to Georgia meeting. And he's there with his mother and father. And no one said that was one of the realest meetings he has ever had with a head coach anywhere. And Noah's been a high profile recruit for at least 2 years now. Georgia dangled the parallels of Nick Chubb, DeAndre Swift. He liked those answers a lot. That showed him his immediate value for Georgia to reference his name with those type of program icons, even DeAndre Swift. I thought it was very interesting how Del McGee even said, if he came to Georgia, he would let him wear Nick Chubb's old number 27 for at least one season until DeAndre Swift would give up number 7. Again, that's another foreshadowing where Noah Cain thinks so greatly and so highly of DeAndre Swift that he thinks he will bounce after his junior season at Georgia as well. And I guess all this stuff, Brandon, heightens in his mind that Georgia has a great running back tradition. But it's also going to have vacancies for those 15 carries a game. He now thinks the potential at Georgia for him to come in and get 10 to 15 carries a game is just as good as it was at Penn State, just as good as it was at Texas before his visit. Georgia changed his mind and sold him on an opportunity there. I thought another piece, you know, that there was so much to get through there, so many groceries to put on the table from that story. That I thought maybe one of the more interesting moments of his weekend, and I didn't really cover it in great detail because there were so many major food groups to hit with that interview, but he said he went out after the Georgia game, and he hung out with Zamir White. And Zamir White was very welcoming, very hopeful that he would want to join the brotherhood of the backfield there. And he said Zamir was just very happy and very pleased and very just very thankful for the way he'd been treated by Georgia all throughout the knee injury process. You know, Zamir just kind of wants to get back and get whole and see what he could do. But the fact that Zamir spoke so highly of Georgia, even when he's experiencing a not-so-glowing situation right now, that really made an effect on Noah Cain as well. And I do feel that Noah Cain left Georgia thinking it was no longer a two-team race. It is clearly a three-team race. And he even said matter-of-factly, and this is a really clear point I hope people took away from that piece, is I do believe, and he even said it in so many words, that Noah Cain feels that Georgia has the best platform and the best potential situation for a running back that wants to go into the NFL and wants to make a long career toting the rock. He feels that Georgia is the best place for him to do that. He's not quite sure yet if Georgia is the best fit for him, though. And he'd like for his college decision, this business decision that we've spoken about, he'd like for that decision to check off both boxes. We'll have a follow on Noah Cain coming in the near future where we get the reaction from both the parents, including what his mother had to say about Georgia and feels about Georgia. And let's make no bones about it. Tanya Cain does need to give her seal of approval, kind of that you can go there, we can ride with Georgia, seal of approval that will, I guess, cement her son's decision.
Let me do a couple things really fast before we let you go as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, including a quick follow-up on all of that. Is it safe to say, Jeff, no matter how many spots remain, whatever the actual number is, that these spots for Georgia for its 2019 class are not slotted for positions, that this is best players you can get regardless of position, and you know they'll let the chips fall where they may? Am I saying that accurately right now, that Georgia with its remaining spots is just looking for a talent? It's not necessarily looking to fill holes?
I think that's right. That's pretty right. I think the only fill hole label that she would put there would be trying to find enough cornerbacks and also trying to find enough running backs to protect against migration from that position, because Georgia got a little bit of a scare this year. I don't know if they'll ever be publicly admitted, but when Zamir was out and then DeAndre Swift wasn't totally 100%, it looked like Georgia only had really two viable big-time SEC backs. And Noah was told by Coach Kirby Smart that Georgia is looking for a game-changer at that position in the 2019 class. Georgia's going to look for a game-changer at that position at running back in every class, because running backs are so vital to the program, kind of goes hand in hand with the offensive linemen. And Kirby kind of just kept it real with Noah Kahn and his family as well. He's like, I get it that you're a running back. I get it that you want to do great things in college and go on to the NFL. And and what better place would it be than Georgia with this offensive line and the running back tradition? And Noah Kahn made the quote to me very succinctly, as he says, Georgia, and he's speaking the entirety of Georgia, fan base, staff, program, tradition, whatever. Georgia does love them some running backs. And then he can just look to the recent history in the NFL and see Gurley, see Michelle, see Chubb, and already see DeAndre Swift angling. He thinks Swift will be the top back in the draft next year. He can already point to four alpha studs that the program has produced. Penn State's got one. Texas has zero. I do think he pays attention to those things.
All right, let me do two quick things before we let you go. First of all, important update on Jaden Hazelwood you provided at DogNation.com after getting a chance to spend some time with him on Friday when his team played down near Savannah. He doesn't come for the official visit for the Georgia Tech game. Apparently that's going to take place later on in December. Jeff, correct fact from fiction for me, because I still remain very confident that no matter what Hazelwood says, and he said some somewhat mercurial things to you at DogNation.com, but no matter what he says, I still feel like Hazelwood's going to be a dog when it's all said and done. He says he doesn't have a top five right now. I feel like him coming to Georgia in December, assuming that a visit does indeed happen, I feel like this is all setting up for Hazelwood to be back in Georgia's class by the time the 2019 cycle comes to an end and he makes his announcement in early January. Am I overconfident right now?
Brandon, I think you're always going to lean on the side of the red and black there for I wouldn't say Georgia is underdog nation in the race here for Jaden Hazelwood. I kind of look at it, and I think in that piece was kind of the first piece where I kind of blended in analysis with matter of fact, and it appears to me that Georgia is the one team that has kind of maybe held its station in life in the hierarchy for Jaden Hazelwood. I think Auburn has wilted a little bit. I think Miami has wilted a little bit. I think folks would be right to monitor the recent decommitment from a wide receiver at Oklahoma, because Oklahoma had stacked the board with 2019 top 10 receivers at that position. But I know Hazelwood doesn't care about that type of stuff at all. I think further program migration at wide receiver, should Riley Ridley or Mecole Hardman even test the waters for the NFL, I think that's something that he would pay attention to. Even though he doesn't pay attention to depth charts, what that would mean was Georgia is preparing receivers for the NFL without gaudy catches and gaudy numbers and everything else like that. I think to me, I just looked around and kind of let my eyes be an observer that day, and I saw how close Hazelwood is to family. I saw how close he is to his mother and a core group of people that they will drive 4.5 miles in cold conditions to go watch him play a third-round playoff game where there was really no danger of them losing to Benedictine. They won by 55 points because that is a special, close-knit group. And I put in that piece, I will find it very interesting how I don't see all those people. I said nothing will surprise me in recruiting, but I don't see all those people moving with him to Miami or moving with him to Oklahoma or maybe moving with him to Auburn. I don't know if Auburn's that far away enough. Or even Tennessee. Dayton told me that Tennessee is a new kind of contender to kind of crack that top five. Brandon, I almost might think here, and I think this is my theory, I think three things need to happen. One, if Jaden doesn't take any more visits, which is the inclination I've been given, until no more officials, no more unofficials, until his December the 13th to the 15th weekend trip to come see Athens, that will be right before the dead period. That will be right before he makes his decision. I think, and we've written the words, the ball in the air, maybe the only big wart for Georgia is they don't throw the ball around enough as he would like when he's seeking a program. Just like Noah Cain, really. Noah Cain is looking for the same things at Georgia that Jaden Hazelwood is at Georgia and at any school. But Noah Cain obviously sees a much more chock-full tradition and resume for a running back compared to a receiver. But I think if all these things line up for Georgia, no more visits. The only visits he has left to take will be to Georgia before the dead period, before he signs. He'll think about that. He'll think about everything else he likes about Georgia, except maybe they don't throw it 35 times a game. And then I think it will come down potentially to family. And that family will be a part of his process and how close they can be in his world. He seems awfully close to his four-year-old younger brother. I think he wants to be an influence and a light in his life. And I don't know if he can do that if he moves far, far away to play for a program that throws the ball around a little bit more than the Bulldogs do.
Hey, real fast before we let you go, Jeff, here in our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, Georgia picks up, you mentioned Noah Cain from IMG Academy, 2020 defensive lineman also now most recently from IMG Academy in Warren Brinson. What's Georgia getting this young man?
Yeah, Brandon, I don't know if I've ever covered a recruiting story quite like this guy. He was at Savannah Christian in Savannah. He goes and works out for his first camp in July. That's the Georgia. That's his dream school. He picks up the offer. Still not rated. He moves to IMG. He plays a lot this year for IMG, even started the first game. Doesn't go take any visits, doesn't do any recruiting. And then he makes his next visit after that Georgia offer back to Georgia. And he went up to Georgia knowing he was going to commit. He shared that sentiment with Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart told him, "We're ready for you whenever you're ready." He's about 6'4". He's about 290 pounds. We'll have some more on him later in the week. But another defensive lineman. Georgia might sign 5, 6, 7 great defensive linemen in the class of 2020. I think that might be the recruiting year for defensive line overload for the Bulldogs. And still, Warren Brinson still not rated, but he is committed to his dream school, and he earned that offer after a camp and then came back on his next visit after the camp and committed to said dream school. Doesn't normally happen like that.
Marlowe's Tavern's tell-all every Tuesday with Jeff Sintel. Of course, Marlowe's presents holiday gifting without the heavy lifting. Right now, guests who purchase a Marlowe's Tavern $50 gift card also get a complimentary bottle of Michelle Brut Sparkling Wine. That's whether either bought online or at the tavern, so good news there on that. Also, you can go to marlowestavern.com to find a great Michelle Brut cocktail recipes crafted by Marlowe's adult beverage manager guru, Rick Bloomberg. I've actually talked with Rick before, hung out with him. What a fascinating guy he is. Nobody knows more about wine pairings and cocktail mixology, I guess you call it. Nobody knows more about that kind of stuff than a Rick from Marlowe's. So that's a really fun thing to check out at marlowestavern.com. And Jeff, I will look forward to seeing you at Marlowe's Tavern coming up on Thursday for our Road to Atlanta Live there at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. Really excited about that, Jeff. We'll look forward to seeing you then. And, of course, for Before the Hedges tomorrow.
Got a lot going on, Brandon. Every time I hear you hyping up these dates for Underdog Nation, I sit there and I make sure I've got them all because it seems like we're literally doing 19 things this week.
Yeah, we are. It couldn't be a more fun week for us. And, Jeff, we appreciate you being such a big part of it. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, Jeff is so right. We do have a lot of just gigantic stuff coming up this week. You know, I've been looking forward to this week for really all year long because I knew how much fun it was going to be. Let me just do a real quick reminder on a couple of these things, and then we'll move on because I've actually got a couple non-Georgia stories for SEC Through that I think you're going to find very fascinating. I want to get to those here. Let me though remind you, as Jeff said, though, it's Thursday, 6 p.m., Marlowe's in Brookhaven for a Road to Atlanta Live there. John Stinchcomb's going to be there. We'll have some special recruiting information for you. That's Thursday at 6, Road to Atlanta Live, Marlowe's in Brookhaven. Also, at 11 a.m. on Saturday in the Blue Lot, for our Road to Atlanta tailgate. The Road to Atlanta tailgate presented by Marlowe's Tavern, as well as Pella Window and Door, our friends from Cadillac, Kroger, and, of course, Dixie Vodka, who will have samples on hand, complimentary Dixie Vodka samples. Those were very popular last year, as you might imagine. The same thing will be true this year. Gigantic TVs, Jeff, me, the Dog Nation crew going to be on hand. We'll have some Dog Nation stuff to give away, including, I've been told, some very special, brand new, never-before-seen Road to Atlanta t-shirts. Awesome, awesome design on those. So please check that out as Underdog Nation Daily's coverage of Road to Atlanta rolls on all week. We'll have more on that, by the way, coming up in a moment, too. All right, with that said, let's do our SEC through for a moment here. And this is pretty interesting. So Football Scoop is a sort of a coaching rumor mill website. And they recently had a little blurb that said that Auburn, who currently has a coach and a very expensive one in Gus Malzahn, has recently been in contact with former Oklahoma coach Bob Stoops. Now, Stoops, through George Schroeder from USA Today, has vehemently, is that the right word to say that word, vehemently? Vehemently? He has vehemently denied that report, that he's apparently not interested in the Auburn job. But whether it's Stoops or somebody else, the fact that Auburn, allegedly through back channels, would be talking to potential replacements for Malzahn is certainly a bit of an eye-opener after it seemed like Malzahn may have steadied the ship when he beat Texas A&M. But he lost to both of his rivals, Georgia and Alabama, in the month of November. Maybe people aren't that happy. There's actually been a report at the 24/7 Sports Auburn site as of late, that at least based on the online chatter, that says that yes, indeed, Auburn may be looking to make a coaching switch, or at least encouraging Malzahn to look elsewhere. Now, if you're Gus Malzahn, why would you help Auburn here? I think the only thing you got to say is, if you want me gone, then pay me my money. It's like something $49 million, something crazy like that. I guess $49 million minus 1 year, but still over $40 million that I'm assuming that Auburn owes Malzahn. What a disaster and what a drama farm that Auburn has proven itself to be once again. Now, I love coaching rumors better than anybody in this world, and this is going to be a fun one to watch. I wish I was a better person sometimes, and I wish that I wasn't as fascinated by other drama from other SEC schools. But the nasty level of Jerry Springer-type behavior coming from this Texas A&M LSU game from Saturday, I have to admit that I am not too good of a person, not too dignified a man, to be into all of this. If you're watching on video, I got a little video I want to show you. Brent Zwerneman, a really good reporter from the Houston Chronicle, captures some video that seems to dispute the LSU description of a fight. So they do get in a little bit of a scuffle after the game. Now, everybody seems to agree that former Auburn quarterback and LSU wide receivers coach, now working at Texas A&M, Damian Craig, appeared to start this fight. But where things get a little different is that after that happened, Steve Kragthorpe, a LSU assistant coach, allegedly was, and this is his description, punched in the pacemaker, which is a, you know, heart device, by Jimbo Fisher's son. The video would seem to dispute that, but what we do see, and you're watching a video, you see this once again from Brent Zwerneman, that John Battle, a defensive back who's been at LSU for 15 years, just absolutely cold cocks Fisher's son in the middle of all of this. The video seems to suggest that Kragthorpe didn't get punched, but Cole Fisher did. The whole thing was started by Damian Craig. This is after LSU fans have talked nonstop about being jobbed by the officials in what were admittedly some questionable calls. There is major drama coming off this LSU-Texas A&M 7 overtime game from Saturday. It does not appear to be going anywhere anytime soon. Speaking of rumors, we should also point out, read Connor Riley's piece at DogNation.com about Mel Tucker's name showing up as a one-time candidate in North Carolina, although Carolina has now hired Mack Brown, as strange as that sentence is to say out loud. I guess he's also been connected to Colorado here. He briefly came up as a Maryland candidate for a moment, so you're going to see Tucker's name a lot this offseason. I don't know if he's ready to jump and become a head coach somewhere, but that's a name you're going to hear a lot, really starting very quickly after the SEC championship game. If not, immediately after early signing period, you'll hear probably more about that. I'll also mention here very quick that the college football playoff top 25 is re-released again tonight. My guess is that Georgia probably moves into number 4, and then what happens below Georgia probably gets very interesting. Is it Oklahoma at 5? Is it Ohio State at 6? And is there a great debate coming between Ohio State and Oklahoma as far as which non-SEC team is the most deserving of another playoff spot if one does indeed become available? I renew my objection to Alabama making the playoff as a non-SEC champion for this particular year. That just seems unseemly to me, unfair to Georgia in a lot of ways, but that debate will be had as it moves on, and for now we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Underdog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for the fans of the two-touchdown underdog Georgia Bulldogs, let me turn my attention back to the SEC championship game just for a moment. And if you watched Road to Atlanta Live, driven by Cadillac, yesterday afternoon, one of the things we played for you was a little audio of Nick Saban referencing his relationship with Kirby Smart. And Saban would have you believe that he is very proud of the success that Kirby Smart has enjoyed, and that playing Kirby Smart in an SEC championship game is not something that he takes personally. Here's what Saban said about that earlier this week.
I think Kirby has done a fantastic job, and no surprise to me. You know, Georgia has always had a pretty good program, no doubt, and he has taken it to the next level. They've done an outstanding job of recruiting good players, but they've also done a really good job of developing the players and getting the players on their team to play at a high level on a consistent basis. So I always like to see guys, hey, we grew up with Kirby, and we were there when his children were born, and know his family, and have a tremendous amount of respect for him and appreciate the great job he did for us for 9 or 10 years or however long he was with us. And you always like to see those guys do well when you compete against them. It's really not personal, at least not to me. I'm for trying to get our team ready to play the best that they can play for our players' sake, and I'm sure he's going to do the same thing for his team.
First of all, I think it's really interesting that Nick Saban says before Kirby Smart got to Georgia, it was a pretty good program. I think it's a pretty interesting description. I'm not sure Georgia fans necessarily disagree with that. But Saban says, hey, it's not personal for me when it comes to battling against Kirby Smart. I'm proud of him. This is just about, you know, trying to win the game. Smart has said similar things about Nick Saban. I have said that I believe Smart when he says it's not personal for him. I believe it's just practical. It's just the obstacle that you've got to overcome if you want to be the best in your business. But for Saban, I've kind of assumed that maybe it is a little bit more personal than he's letting on. After all, this is a guy that he brought up and trained who's all of a sudden trying to take food off of his table. For me, that feels like the kind of thing that maybe Saban would take a little more personally than what Kirby Smart takes it when these two guys go head-to-head. For what it's worth, the guy who knows both these guys personally and individually is our buddy Mike Johnson, the former Alabama All-American. If you haven't noticed, he's with us this week for Road to Atlanta Live, driven by Cadillac. And on yesterday's program, he says he doesn't necessarily believe either one of these guys when they say it's not personal between the two.
I think, honestly, I think both of them are fibbing just a little bit in terms of their responses to the question. I think that both of them are in that mold, and they're both great guys, and they're both great leaders where they want to look at it, and they want to put the focus on the football game. They want to put the focus on the players. They want the players to have all the pride and all the passion when the game is all said and done. When it's over, they want the credit to go to their football team. Not necessarily Kirby knew what to do against Nick Saban, yeah, so he was able to step in and do it, or you know, Nick Saban being able to point out and say, listen, I taught this guy everything, so my team was able to win. I don't think that really goes into either one of them's dictionary or library in terms of what they're going to say in these pressers. I think both of them, to a small degree, and they would never admit it in front of the cameras or on the microphones or on the teleconference, whatever it is, to a small degree, I think both of them understand that this, in terms of the future of both of these programs, is a monumental game. I think when you look at Georgia being able to take that next step and beat an Alabama, and Alabama trying to continue to stay on top and win some of these recruiting battles that Georgia has been able to take from them in the past year plus, I think they understand that outside of just this game means a lot more than just one Saturday in Atlanta.
When Jeff Sintel was with us before, he talked about the media being obsessed with the relationship between Smart and Saban, and how can you not find this to be a fascinating subplot and storyline of this game, that what I think are the two best teams in the country this year are coached by coaches who know each other as intimately as Smart and Saban know each other. As Saban said, they were there when Smart's kids were born. That's a fascinating deal for this game, and it really can't be overlooked or overstated in terms of how unique it makes the atmosphere surrounding the game. And also, let me point out, how much fun is it to hear Mike Johnson again here on these Dog Nation channels? By the way, if you want more of Mike, join us for Road to Atlanta Live today, 5 p.m. on the Dog Nation video channels. It's driven by Cadillac. We'll preview the big game on Saturday. We'll look forward to seeing you there at 5 p.m. Yeah, so a lot going on this week. week, as Jeff Sintel pointed out. We're trying to keep you updated on all of it, including how you can catch the game on Saturday, too. And don't forget that WSB Radio is the only place to hear every play of the SEC Championship with the voice of the Dogs, Scott Howard, and the UGA All-American Eric Zier. It is the home of the Dogs, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Also, don't forget the pregame coverage starts 4 hours before kickoff when the Dogs take on Alabama. You can hear Eric Zier, Kevin Butler, great former Dogs there for that one. It's the only place to hear your Georgia guys actually talking about Georgia. It's News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. I love listening to those guys. I was actually listening to WSB this morning coming in, and I found out a couple things I didn't know. First of all, we've been talking about Underdog Nation Daily this week. Did you know this is the biggest underdog Georgia's been since 2009? And if Georgia wins, it'd be the biggest underdog to ever win outright in the SEC Championship. By the way, Gatorhater Updater, how many days? Where are we at for the Gatorhater Updater? 7:59. We'll see you tomorrow for Underdog Nation Daily.